We'll pick up reading in verse 15, John chapter 21. Some of you thought we would never come to this day and reach the end of the Gospel of John. My heart is a bit sad as we come to the end of what a great story of the life of Christ and His work in the lives and through the lives of those that we find in John's Gospel. And He continues to use His Word in the lives of His children, both drawing you unto Himself and growing you through faith. John chapter 21, verse 15. Remember that the disciples, some of them were fishing, and Jesus came to them, and they caught a whole bunch of fish at His command, and He had prepared a breakfast for them at the beach, and they came and they ate together, and this is immediately thereafter. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these other men?" Why would Jesus ask Simon Peter such a question? Oh, maybe because he was thinking back earlier in his ministry. When Matthew recorded these words, "Then Jesus told them, 'This very night you will all fall away on account of me. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee.'" Peter replied, "Even if all fall away from you," sounds like Peter, "even if everybody else falls away from you, Jesus, I won't. I will never. That won't happen to me. I tell you the truth," Jesus said. Jesus answered, "This very night, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times." But Peter declared, "Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you." And all the other disciples said the same. And now Jesus comes to Peter and He says, "Peter, do you love me with a self-sacrificing kind of love? Do you love me with the kind of love that's willing to give up everything of your own and live completely and solely and wholeheartedly for me? Do you love me with that kind of love?" Maybe because once upon a time Peter said, "I'll never fall away from you, Jesus." "Do you really love me, Peter?" "Yes, Lord." Back to John 21, verse 15, he said, "You know. You have full knowledge. You understand, Jesus. You can see intimately who I am. And you know that I have a brotherly love for you." Did you catch that shift? Jesus is talking to Peter, and He uses one word for love, the self-sacrificial kind of love. And Peter says, you wouldn't hear it in our culture today. We say things like, "I love ice cream, and I love my dog, and I love my wife," and there better be a difference between those three. But see, when they spoke, they used actually different words. And so there was a different word used by Peter in answering Jesus. And it really doesn't do it justice, but sort of kind of like this. Imagine if I said to my wife, "Honey, do you love me?" And she said, "Well, you know, I like you." "Well, no, that's not what I asked you." But it's somewhat, you catch a little of the flavor of what John paints for you as a picture in John 21 when Jesus says to Simon Peter, are you all out for me, Peter? And Peter says, "Well, I love you like a brother. I have affection for you, and you know that. You know my heart." And Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Again, verse 16 of John 21, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you have this self-sacrificing kind of love for me? Are you willing to give up everything for me? Do you love me with everything you've got? Why would he ask him that a second time? Maybe he was remembering earlier in his ministry. Once again, as Matthew records, when he was at the Garden of Gethsemane, he's there with his disciples. And he says to them, sit here while I go over there and pray. You'll remember with me that this is right before he was betrayed and crucified. He took Peter, listen now, he took Peter, this same one that John writes of in John 21, and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. So the disciples are with him at the garden, and Jesus goes farther, and he takes Peter and two others, three of the closest disciples, and Jesus is in his hour of agony and grief, and he knows what's coming, and he's struggling through this, and he takes his three closest a little farther into the garden. Then he said to them, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here. Keep watch with me. Going a little farther, he fell with his face to the ground and he prayed, my Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me. Yet not as I will, but as you will. Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. Could you men not keep watch with me for 1 hour? He asked. Peter, the text in Matthew says, Peter, couldn't you watch for an hour? This is the crux of history. Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the body is weak. He went away a second time and he prayed, Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done. When he came back again, he found them praying. Oh no, they weren't praying. They were sleeping because their eyes were heavy. So he left them and went away once more, and he prayed the third time, saying the same thing. Then he returned to the disciples and said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour is near. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer. Maybe that's why Jesus asked Peter a second time, Peter, do you love me with everything that you've got? Self-sacrificial love. Do you love me like that, Peter? He answered, yes, Lord. You know, you are aware of, you know my heart. You can see right through me. Intimately, you know me. And you know that I have this brotherly affection for you. Peter, that's not what he asked you. That's a different answer to a specific question. What if he asked you that question? What if he said to you, do you love me? If Jesus came through those doors and sat down beside you and he put his arm around you and he said, do you love me? Are you willing to give up everything for me? Do you have a self-sacrificing kind of love for me? Would we even be able to say, well, we have a brotherly affection for you, Jesus? There's a radically different Peter here than there was back a few chapters. And so verse 17, the third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Jesus, why are you asking Peter a third time? If you go back to John chapter 18, verse 15, you find this particular scenario. John 18:15, Simon Peter and another disciple were following Jesus. Because this disciple was known to the high priest, he went with Jesus into the high priest's courtyard, but Peter had to wait outside at the door. The other disciple, who was known to the high priest, came back, spoke to the girl on duty there, and brought Peter in. "You're not one of his disciples, are you?" the girl at the door asked Peter. "Hey, you're not one of Jesus' disciples, are you?" Great evangelistic opportunity, correct? And Peter, impetuous as he was, jumped on that one with both talons. Are you kidding me? I am not. What did you just say, Peter? I'm not one of his disciples. It was cold, and the servants and officials stood around the fire they had made to keep warm. Peter was standing with them, warming himself. And if you skip down to verse 25, you read this. As Simon Peter stood warming himself, he was asked, "You are not one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it, saying, "I am not." One of the high priest's servants, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, challenged him. "Didn't I see you with him in the olive grove?" Again, Peter denied it. That's three times for those of you who weren't counting. And at that moment, the rooster began to crow, just like Jesus told him what would happen. And now we come to this scenario after the Christ had been resurrected. And Jesus asks him not once, not twice, but here the third time, Jesus says, "Peter," he doesn't ask him, "do you have a self-sacrificial kind of love for me?" Here he says, "Do you have a brotherly affection for me?" And Peter was frustrated that Jesus would ask him three times. Maybe the sting of three denials penetrated his heart. And to this question, "Do you love me? Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. I tell you the truth, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted, but when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. History records that he was martyred for his Christ. Then he said to him, "Follow me." I get excited about that. If you'll go back with me to the early days of Jesus' public ministry, he found one Simon Peter and he called him to follow me. And Simon had done that well for some time, but there was some sanding that needed to take place. And Jesus did that very well. And he was at work in the life of Peter, making him more into the image of a follower of Christ. But you understand that Peter had failed his Christ miserably, and now that Jesus was resurrected, could Peter still be a disciple? Could he still be a follower of Christ? And here, what you have before you is the story of Jesus bringing this disciple back to a place of prominence as a disciple of Christ, only with a whole new character. This man is radically different, and he gets to follow Christ. And there's a lot more than that he gets. Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and said, "Lord, who is going to betray you?" When Peter saw him, he asked, "Well, Lord, what about him? This is what's to happen to me. What about him?" Jesus answered, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me." Because of this, the rumor spread among the brothers that this disciple would not die. But Jesus did not say that he would not die. He only said, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? This is the disciple who testifies to these things and wrote them down. We know that his testimony is true. Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that even the whole world would not have room for the books that would be written. Pray with me. Father, your word is before us. Would you give us insight into the truth? Would you give us a little better understanding? Not so that we would be puffed up with knowledge, but so that we would be changed by the truth from the inside out. So that we wouldn't go forth from this place with a list of do's and don'ts, but that we would go forth from this place with a heart that loves you even more today than it did yesterday, and as a result, changes our behavior. Teach us how to be obedient to your word because we love you, because you first loved us. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. Follow Jesus. How do you get Peter from where he was as a fisherman, crass as he was, impetuous as he was, self-confident as he was? How do you get such a man from where he was to where Christ wants him to be as a follower after Christ? How do you do that? Couple of things that I want you to see, or a few things that I want you to see, and the first is this: to get rid of self-confidence. See, when I look back over the life of Peter in the ministry of Jesus on the face of this earth, I see a man who had a great deal of self-confidence. He was willing to step forward. I think he was a natural leader. They even followed him to fish after the resurrection, where Jesus finds them fishing. Peter was a natural leader. And I think he was confident. And I think he was the kind of guy to go, get out of the way, let me handle that thing, I can do that. I think he thought he got it. I think he had this self-confidence, and maybe you do too. Maybe you're a talented individual, and you have all the confidence in the world, and our culture encourages that. You've got to be confident in yourself. But I'm here to tell you that Jesus has a different plan. And the confidence isn't in you and me. The confidence has to be gone out of self. I'm not confident in me and my ability. That's not what Jesus is teaching us here. I think what he's doing in the life of Peter is helping him to understand, you can't follow me. You ain't got what it takes, Peter. I don't care how much self-confidence you've gained over the years. You need to understand you don't have enough self-confidence to follow the living Christ. In fact, your self-confidence will get in the way. And so what is it that Jesus introduces or allows in the life of Peter to bring him to a place where he's no longer self-confident? Conflict. Back there in the temple courtyard. Conflict when Jesus tells him that I soon will be gone and I will go to the cross, and Peter says, no way. Chaos or crisis. He's watching Christ go into the temple and he's beginning to put the pieces together and he's beginning to understand what Jesus told them would happen is happening before his eyes, and he can't stop it. It has to be rocking Peter's self-confident world. There went Jesus, the man I was following, the man who was going to defeat Rome and set up an earthly kingdom, and I was going to sit on the throne next to him. What do I do now? I can't fix it. It won't work. It's not happening the way I thought it should happen. And suddenly his self-confidence is going down the tubes. Anybody identify with that? You know, you've had the world by the tail and everything's gone honky-dory, and then all of a sudden there's chaos and crisis and conflict in your life. And suddenly things are out of your control and you don't know what to do. You can't fix it. You don't know how to handle it. You don't have the tools or the resources to make it work. God will use a lot of different things in our lives, including our failures. What did he tell them in John 15? I am the vine, you are the branches. Apart from me, you can do a few things. Most things. Nada. You can do nothing. Oh, you can achieve all that this world has to offer, but you will have accomplished, in essence, nothing. You've got to get rid of self-confidence. You can't love Jesus without his help. You can't have the kind of self-sacrificial love that Jesus was asking of Peter without his help, without first him loving you. Paul tried it. He asks and tells us about it in Romans chapter 7. I do the things that I don't want to do. I don't do the things that I want to do. I want to love the Lord with everything I've got, but I don't got it without him. Stop depending on yourself. That's scary, isn't it? Your talent minus Jesus Christ equals nothing. Period. You want to follow Jesus? You want to love Jesus? Self-confidence has to go. I didn't say you couldn't have confidence, but your confidence better not be in you. It better be in him. The one who gives to you the talents and the one who takes away. The one who gives to you life and the one who takes it away. Get rid of self-destruction. See, once self-confidence is eroded and gone, it would be easy to become depressed and discouraged and to want to give up. Well, what's left, God? All I had in this life was my talents and my abilities and my health and my strength, and all of that is waning away. Now what do I do? I'll just give up. Anybody been there? Pastor, you took away my self-confidence. Thanks, I got nothing left. Oh no, that's so far from the truth. Now you're about to gain everything. Get rid of self-destruction. Peter could have fished his life away. He could have lived in a stupor of guilt and shame. He could have given up. But Christ wouldn't allow such. Enter stage left, the risen Christ. And Jesus approaches Peter after breakfast. And I think the other disciples got to hear what God was doing, God in human flesh was doing in this man's life, right there in front of them. Jesus had forgiven Peter for his failure, and he was restoring him to useful service to the King of Kings. Get rid of self-destruction. Stop feeling sorry for yourself because you have failed the living God. Our enemy would love to keep us in this stupor. I blew it. I'm no good. God can't use me. How dare you say such of the living God? Is he that small that he can't overcome? Is he so small that the cross of Christ can't take care of your sin and mine? Is your Christ so small that the failures you have committed against the living God can't be paid for at Calvary's cross? How dare you affront my God in such a way as that? Stop it. Stop. And turn to Christ, whose death paid all your sin. As long as we've got self-confidence, we're trying to deal with it ourselves. It appears to me that Jesus is taking that away and he's bringing to you his finished work at Calvary and his purpose for your life to be fulfilled. Get rid of self-destruction And then finally, if you would follow Christ, get rid of self-service. There's no I left in Peter. It's interesting how I think Peter might have answered these questions. I kind of see him answering Jesus a little bit like Rodney Dangerfield as Jesus said, "Peter, do you love me?" "You know I do. I got this licked, God. I love you. Sure I do. I love you more than all these other disciples. Ain't I something?" Now, I'm exaggerating, but that's kind of the picture that I have of Peter before his self-confidence was gone. And Jesus let him go out on that limb, and he failed him miserably. And I don't hear that now. I don't hear Peter going, "I'll do this. I got it. Everybody else may, but I won't fail you, God. I'm here for you." I don't hear that. I hear Peter listening to Jesus and saying, "You know. You know my heart. If you want to follow Jesus, you got to stop living for yourself." We've played this game in American culture way too long, and probably not only in American culture. We live a schizophrenic life. Part of me lives for me, and part of me lives for Christ. Every once in a while, they intersect or collide. Jesus is sending Peter on a new purpose, a new mission. And there's no room for self-service here. Wonder what it would look like if you went to the gas station, pulled up to the pump, and instead of pumping gas into your own car, you just walked around and said, "Can I get that for you? Can I fill your gas tank? Hang on just a minute, let me get your start. Can I fill up your gas tank?" And that's exactly what Jesus was asking Peter to do. Stop living for Peter and start filling the tanks of these sheep, Peter. Care for them. They need it all day long. 24 hours a day, Peter, they need you to watch over them. And I'm giving you charge of my sheep. Start living for them because you love me. You want to express your love for me, Peter? Take care of my sheep. I'm fascinated by what Jesus has just done. When he first called Peter to follow him, what did he do? He said, "I'll make you fishers of men." In the interim, he told his disciples, "You will go make disciples." And here he's saying, more than being a fisher of men, he's given a whole new picture. Take care of these sheep. "Well, I don't mind reeling them in, Lord, but I sure don't want to clean them and take care of them." "You mean I got to feed them? I got to clean up after them? I got to go rescue them when they get caught in the briar patch?" "Yeah, that's what you got to do, Peter. But that leaves no time for me." "You're just exactly right. And that's what it looks like to follow me. Reckless abandonment of yourself." Where's he calling you to give up yourself? The cool thing is he doesn't ask you to do it by yourself. "Peter, it's time to stop doing your own thing, like cutting off a man's ear and rescuing the throne for Jesus. And it's time to start following after him. It's time to start asking him what his plans for me are today." How do you follow Jesus? You get rid of self-confidence. You get rid of self-destruction. And you get rid of self-service. Now you're ready to follow Christ. So where does all that change occur? It occurs right here. At the crossroads. It occurs right there where Christ gave his life. Will you pray with me as we prepare to meet him? Heads bowed and eyes closed. For some of you, he may have out his sandpaper, sanding off some